we are going to take a look at the media coverage of the 2016 presidential race so far, including the Trump factor, the upcoming GOP debates, how the national media is treating Governor Walker, and whatever else you want to talk about. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. We'll get his assessment of how the media are doing so far, and we'll welcome your assessment, too. What do you make of the media coverage so far? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what would you like to see the media cover in the presidential race? How do you feel about media coverage, especially of Donald Trump these days? He's in the headlines every day, and he's also skyrocketing in the polls. What does that say? Well, we'll talk about all of these issues this hour. Mike Wagner, associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison, is an expert on American politics, political communication, political behavior, and religion and politics. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
So as a professor in both journalism and political science, what strikes you most about media coverage so far of the presidential race?
I think this is the first race where we're really seeing the impact of medias, right? So the media have become increasingly fragmented. It used to be that the New York Times and the three major television networks would really set the agenda for what other news media covered. And that's still true. These are still powerful organizations. But what Twitter does and what Facebook does and what the Huffington Post and Fox News and all of these other outlets that have niche audiences do are really shaping who the candidates are choosing to talk to, what particular primary voters are going to expose themselves to in the first place, and what they're going to learn about candidates. And it's very different, I think, this time around. And candidates are getting much better at trying to fly over, if you will, than the mainstream news media and talk to niche audiences at preferred outlets or on their own Twitter feeds or their own Tumblr pages or by texting people. And so it's kind of a different media environment. And it's been different for a while, but candidates are really finally getting good at using it.
Oh, interesting. So does an example pop to mind?
For example, you can think about in 2016, Russ Feingold has a Tumblr page where he's, you know, chronicling all the different counties he's going to and all the, you know, I'm going to visit all the counties. Here's the map and here's what we're doing on Tumblr. Or you see, Governor Walker has a very interactive page for his presidential campaign. Different candidates have regular Twitter accounts, and so the campaign account will tweet something, but then when the candidate does, they'll sign it so that you know it's from them. So there's a lot of that kind of thing going on. A lot of candidates are avoiding interviews with lots of national outlets and doing them at friendlier places. So lots of Republicans are doing more on Fox News than in other places. Hillary Clinton's first major interview was with CNN and not with, you know, the New York Times or the Washington Post or a major television network. And so we're seeing candidates be more strategic about where they make themselves available to the media.
Interesting, too. That reminds me that Governor Walker, when he made it official last week, he tweeted it, but it was actually a little bit ahead of time, too. It was not even on Monday, the official day.
Yeah, there was one that came out earlier, and the reporting I've seen on that suggests that it wasn't his campaign that did that, and so something that might have happened with Twitter itself. But, yeah, there were a couple of announcements, but to get the viral ball rolling, you know, getting that stuff out and getting people talking about you is usually a pretty good thing when you're announcing for president.
And in the spirit of equal time, Hillary Clinton announced on a YouTube video.
With a video, right? Another example of a candidate really controlling the message. So here's a long video featuring the kinds of Americans I want to speak to persuade to vote for me in the general election, assuming that she gets through the primary. And so it's a very tightly controlled message. kind of honing, here's what I want to talk about, here are the kind of people I care about, here are the kinds of voters that I want to start paying attention to me early on, so hopefully they'll be with me the whole way, I think is kind of what she was going after in that particular video, which was, you know, well-produced, but also, you know, has the advantage of not having to take any questions afterwards.
Well, let's focus in on some of the headlines of recent days.
Sure.
The focus has been on Donald Trump, who... I guess politics aside is not your typical presidential candidate. What challenges does he pose to the media in terms of his coverage?
Well, the big challenge is how much of him to cover, right? So most people, myself included, who study politics think that, you know, his chances are between slim and none and slim just left town, right? So there's not a big chance for Donald Trump to become the Republican nominee. He does not have a lot of consistent issue preferences that are consistent with the Republican Party over time. He is, you know, quite bombastic, not well liked by the party insiders in the Republican Party. And, you know, on the one hand, you could say, oh, well, he's got this kind of lead right now in the polls. But polls at this time of year are not at all predictive of who ends up winning the nomination. You can think back to 2012 in Iowa, and six different people on the Republican side led an Iowa caucus poll, and not one of them won the Iowa caucus. And so these polls aren't very important when it comes to us understanding who the person's going to be. And the other thing about Trump is that everybody knows who he is, and he's still only polling at about 20%. So his name recognition's 100%, but only, you know, 20% of Republican primary voters say that he's their person right now, whereas, you know, far fewer people know who Scott Walker is or John Kasich is or Rick Perry is or, you know, Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or all the way down the line of 15 or 16 candidates. And so their name recognition is only going to go up. Trump's has nowhere to go, and most people already don't like him, which suggests he's not going to last all that long.
Yeah, I think it was a Washington Post poll showed Trump in number one and Governor Walker number two, but that's mm-hmm. also a national poll, not a statewide poll.
Right, and those national polls fluctuate a lot. Herman Cain led national polls. Newt Gingrich led national polls. Rick Santorum, Michelle Bachmann. You know, none of those people you know, came within sniffing distance of the White House in 2012.
The Huffington Post decided on Friday that its coverage of the Trump campaign would be relegated to its entertainment desk, not
they
its
did.
Political team.
Yep.
It said Trump's campaign is a sideshow and that it's not taking the bait. So sounds like you might agree with that move.
Well, you know, that's a complicated question. So he is running for president. He is polling well. And while that's not predictive of who wins, what's predictive of who wins is not so important from the media's point of view. The news media shouldn't care so much about how the predictive power of early primary polls as they should about here are the people who are running for president, running a campaign, going to early primary states, making themselves available to the media, holding events where people show up. They should cover that stuff. On the other hand, it's sort of laudable that the Huffington Post would say, yeah, here's a person who... it does not do the things that most serious presidential candidates have done, and we don't know that he's a serious candidate. But it's probably not the news media's job to make that determination. I kind of go back and forth on whether I think that's a great idea for the Huffington Post or not. It's certainly correct with respect to he's not going to be the Republican nominee, but there are a lot of people who are running who aren't going to be the Republican nominee, and they deserve their chance to make their case to voters. And these outlets owe their readers an opportunity to learn about these people who say that they want to be, you know, the leader of the free world.
Jason on Facebook writes, Trump is merely serving his preordained role, human straw man running flack for the other GOP candidates. They trot him out and he says super crazy things, knowing full well that it will serve to A, draw media attention away from the actual issues that are worth discussing, B, make the other GOP candidates appear more mainstream and centrist to moderate voters, and C, prompt overreactive gasps from the left to the delight of the far right. The RNC probably pays him for each day he manages to stay in the headlines as a real candidate.
You know, I think there's a lot going on in that post, some of which I agree with and some of which I don't. So I do think that the Trump campaign has taken away airtime, ink, you know, web presence for a lot of other candidates who are far more serious about seeking the White House and who are far more likely to be a major party nominee. And so we're learning less about Governor Walker and Governor Kasich and Senator Cruz than we otherwise might. And it's also true that when Donald Trump gives out Senator Graham's phone number to a crowd and, you know, kind of wrecks his life for a day or two, you know, those things are going to get a lot of news media attention. I'm not so sure that I think that the Republican National Committee is in cahoots with Donald Trump. There have been a lot of reports from the mainstream media that members of the RNC have asked him to tone it down, are trying to figure out how they deal with him, because on the one hand, most of the Republican candidates who are quote-unquote top-tier candidates have denounced something that Trump has said in the last week in one way or another, whether it's disparaging Senator John McCain's service to our country, or whether it's, you know, giving out Lindsey Graham's phone number, or saying that people who come across the border are mostly rapists, which he said. And so these sorts of things have been broadly denounced by other, you know, people who are running for president on the Republican side. And they don't want him to get a lot of this attention. They want the attention for themselves, because not everybody knows who they are, and they have to know who they are if they want to have any chance to win. And all the oxygen is being sucked up by Donald Trump. And so I don't know that the RNC or the Republican candidates like it. It might have the effect of making some of their positions that might otherwise be framed as more extreme, as more moderate, but I don't really see a lot of that happening outside of commentary. I don't see voters making that same kind of distinction.
And we'll talk about some more of the specifics of those controversial statements that Donald Trump has made and reaction from the other GOP candidates. But I did want to ask you for your reaction to, after saying that Senator John McCain was not a war hero, or that he prefers his war heroes
Not get captured.
Mm-hmm. The Des Moines Register called on Trump to pull the plug on his bloviating sideshow. So what do you think of a newspaper telling a presidential candidate to drop out?
Well, you know, the editorial boards of newspapers make strong opinions about candidates, and the Des Moines Register is a paper that has, you know, one of the early jobs. The Manchester Union Leader in New Hampshire does the same kind of thing, where they have early access to these people who are running and talk to them as an editorial board and ask them tough questions about serious issues and make a recommendation and endorse candidates on both the Republican and Democratic sides in the primaries. And so that's part of what these papers have traditionally done. The editorial board is well within its rights to call on anybody to enter or drop out of the race. Trump, of course, every time he's attacked, he comes back tenfold and is, you know, called the paper a failing paper and insulted the paper, and has also done, you know, what most people do, which is equate the editorial side and the news side of the Des Moines Register's organization. And of course, you know, you talk to journalists who are covering campaigns and they'll say, you know, we're not talking to our editorial board about how to cover a candidate. And if the editorial board wants someone to drop out, that doesn't mean I'm not going to go to his events, report what he says, report the reaction to it. And so the news side of the Register is still different than the editorial board side. One caveat to that point is there is some evidence that when newspapers endorse a candidate, that candidate is someone who gets better, more positive coverage from that newspaper. And it's not a edict from on high where people reporters think I better do this, but there does seem to be some evidence that people who get the endorsement get more favorable coverage. Maybe that's just because they're running better campaigns, right? It's not necessarily that the reporters are being positive about who it was that the paper endorsed, but there is, you know, pretty systematic evidence across states and across time that when a paper endorses somebody, that paper tends to give more positive coverage to that candidate.
Well, let's listen to some of those controversial things that Trump has said.
There are so many.
All right, this happened Saturday at a forum in Iowa, in which he was asked if Senator John McCain was a war hero. Let's take a listen.
He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war
Five
hero.
And a half years
He's
in the
a war
POW
hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
And other GOP presidential candidates then started denouncing those comments and called on Trump to apologize. Here's Governor Walker reacting.
I denounce Donald Trump for that. He needs to apologize to Senator McCain and all the other men and women who wore the uniform.
So how big a hit might Trump now take with all the negative coverage? The polls were taken before this war hero controversy.
That's true. Yeah, he might take a little bit of a hit for this in the polls. But remember, everybody knows who he is, and only 20% of primary voters are for him. They probably really like him and probably like how he's pushing back against these denouncements and calls for him to stop his campaign. He's done nothing but double down on all of that stuff since these things have happened. You know, that's not even the most recent Trump controversy, and that was just last week. And so he's not going to probably stop saying things that will get a lot of media attention. That's something he's done his whole life, and he's very good at it, and is probably not going to stop. It may affect people in the polls who are saying Donald Trump in response to who would you vote for, only because they don't really know anything about anybody else. And that will certainly start to happen, especially now as more and more people are formally announcing and getting in the race and getting a little splash of coverage here and there.
And then there are some who say that Donald Trump, with these what some would consider, you know, outrageous statements, is saying what a lot of people are thinking, and that he shows that he doesn't back down, and that he's a tough guy, and there's a block of voters out there that that finds that refreshing.
There are some people who like it. That's for sure. Not enough to make him his party's nominee, but there are certainly some people out there who are responding to the way he campaigns.
Yeah, and when you say he has a slim to no chance of winning the GOP nomination, and what did you say? Slim just left town?
Yes. Yeah. I would say I stole that from Dan Rather, who he has his chances between slim and none, and slim just left town. Yeah.
But he has a ton of money. Couldn't that cause him to be in the race for a longer period?
Being in the race for a longer period is not the same thing as winning, right? And so he may last for a long time. He'll eventually have to decide how much of his own money he wants to pour in, because he has not raised very much money, at least so far. This will be self-financed. He can afford it. You know, no one should feel bad about Donald Trump and his bank account. But the main predictors of who wins a presidential primary are far more tied to party activists and party insiders than they are early polls or whether somebody has a lot of money. Sheldon Adelson, a billionaire conservative, propped up Newt Gingrich's campaign for months in 2012, but his money could not buy Newt Gingrich the presidential nomination. Howard Dean outraised everybody on the Democratic side in 2004 early on and didn't come close to winning the Democratic nomination. So whether you're raising the money or whether it's your own, that's not the only thing that matters. It's important. I'm not saying that the money isn't important, and the fact that the Jeb Bush has got over $100 million that the group supporting him have raised so far is certainly important. But you can't just buy it, especially because other people are contesting it, and there's lots of other people running. They're raising lots of money too, and they have the support of the party insiders who know the activists in the states who can help turn out the vote. That's where these things really start to matter.
Well, we will talk about other candidates and other issues and other aspects of media coverage of the presidential race so far after a short break. Mike Wagner is our guest, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. So what do you think of media coverage so far of the candidates and the issues on the presidential campaign trail? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about media coverage of the presidential race with Mike Wagner, who is with the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. So talking media and politics, and wondering what you think about how media coverage has been so far. We'll focus in a little bit now on how the media are treating Governor Scott Walker, who officially launched his presidential campaign last week in Waukesha. And welcome your thoughts on that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Mike Wagner, general thoughts on how big a splash Governor Walker made when he entered the race officially last week?
Yeah, he had a solid rollout. He got a lot of positive coverage about his announcement for president. The event looked like it was, you know, professionally put together and a serious, you know, event for a candidate who plans on sticking around and making a serious run for the nomination. A lot of the mainstream news media provided pretty detailed coverage, talking a bit about some of the things he's best known for on the policy side in Wisconsin, making mention of some of the more controversial elements of his time in office, such as the John Doe investigation. So a lot of the national coverage provided kind of a mixed bag. There was also a lot of profile pieces, talking about him and his marriage or him and his Harley and kind of fawning coverage of, you know, the motorcycle riding governor and the Washington Post and things like that. But in general, it's been a mixed bag. He's gotten a lot of positive attention since he's announced. The coverage up to that point had been positive about his electability winning in Wisconsin, but had questioned his foreign policy credentials especially. And so, you know, depending on the outlet and the day and the topic, his coverage has been positive or negative.
Some reporters took notice and tweeted that Walker delivered his entire speech without a teleprompter. What does that particular angle say to you?
Nothing. It doesn't really tell us much. Your candidates pretty much memorize their stump speeches, and it's not like he hadn't been out giving speeches for quite a long time, and he had plenty of time to practice it. And so because there was no teleprompter there, doesn't really tell us anything about what kind of president someone would be.
We spoke with State Representative Mandela Barnes, who represents Milwaukee, on mm-hmm. Monday's State Capitol Report. Mandela Barnes is black, and he went to the presidential announcement. He walked in and was asked, he said, by a volunteer, if he would like to be on stage in a prominent location. Mm. And he said no. He politely declined. And then he was recognized by somebody else with Governor Walker's campaign as a Democratic state representative who apparently was not invited to be there and was asked to leave. What does that say to you?
Well, the first part of that story talks about how important campaigns think what they call the optics are. So what do the pictures look like? Mm-hmm. Is this a picture of a bunch of white men in the background of another Republican candidate running for office? Republicans traditionally take heat from the news media and Democrats and moderates for not being a very diverse party. And so, you know, whenever Republicans can, they want to paint a picture that starts to push back against that narrative. And so we certainly, you know, see that in the beginning of the story. And it's nothing new for presidential campaigns to require people at their events to be their supporters. President Bush in 2004 famously had people attending his rally sign loyalty oaths to him coming in. And so, this kind of thing, you know, does happen. Presidential campaigns on the kind of side of those who are running the campaign or try to be as tightly controlled as they can, because the last thing that they want are a bunch of negative stories knocking off what they want to be in the paper or on television to be there. So they would rather not have the story be a prominent opponent of Governor Walker showed up to his campaign. They would rather it be, you know, there was a glorious kickoff and everybody cheered and that sort of thing. And so that kind of stuff happens, and it's an example of how tightly controlled presidential campaigns are and how much they care about how things look as compared to how things sound. You know, there's a famous story of 60 Minutes once did a very negative story about Ronald Reagan. And afterwards, one of his staffers called the offices and thanked them for the story because all the pictures were of cheering crowds. And they thought, most people aren't watching with rapt attention, and they'll just see the president and people adoring him, and that's what we want.
Late-night TV talk show host Jimmy Fallon had some fun at Walker's expense last week because of the governor's story about shopping for shirts at Kohl's department store. As you're hearing this audio from Jimmy Fallon's show, the screen is split into multiple windows showing separate clips of Walker's speeches at different places talking about that shopping experience. So let's take a listen.
I went to Kohl's department stores near our house,
and I bought something at the price it was marked at.
So now I know over the years, if I'm going to buy a shirt, It was $29.99. I go to the rack that says now $19.99. I remember to get the flyer out that we got mailed at our house.
Well, you get
15
or 20
or,
if you're
really,
really
lucky, 30% off. Tonette usually is with, and she'll reach into her purse and pull out some of that
Kohl's cash.
And next thing you know, they're paying me to buy the shirt.
All right. Politics aside, Jimmy Fallon made some sort of comment about, hey, Governor Walker, why don't you, you know, buy some new material at Kohl's after that? First off, I guess, what's your reaction to Fallon poking fun at him?
Yeah, I saw it when he did it. I thought it was really funny. You know, it's just an example of, again, how tightly controlled these campaign speeches are. You know, on the one hand, you know, you could look at that and say, oh, gosh, he just says the same thing every time and in the same tone of voice. And it's so rehearsed and so practiced, and you could certainly poo-poo it. But on the other hand, if Governor Walker or any other presidential candidate said something different every time they were out, then you couldn't trust them. Then they would just be a flip-flopper or not saying anything that you could believe. And so, of course, you know, politicians trot out stories that they think make them look good and say so all the time. There's a really nice book about the John F. Kennedy administration called Counselor, written by his speechwriter Ted Sorensen, where he said, at one point we just got to the point where I would just write a word like uncle story on the top of the speech, and he and Kennedy would know what to say, you know, and tell the same story in the same way every time. And this is what politicians do, because the people at the rally are seeing them for the first time, usually. The reporters, you know, typically tune these things out because they've heard the speech a zillion times. But this kind of thing happens a lot. And in fact, a very similar kind of thing was put together in the documentary Journeys with George about the 2000 presidential campaign and then Governor George W. Bush, where they show him saying the exact same words, you know, in 15 different locations, you know, cutting into each different location with the same speech. And that's what candidates do. They hone a stump speech that they think works, and they keep saying it because they're in front of a new audience every day.
So if the audience seeing that does the audience seeing that on Jimmy Fallon's show come away with, oh, you know, that guy just is so repetitive and just has a, you know, this scripted thing, and I don't, you know, I don't know, I don't like him? Or do they smile and say, hey, that's great, he buys his shirts at Kohl's?
Yeah, I think it depends on which party you like, right? So if you're a Democrat, you say, oh gosh, I knew it. You know, just another example of, you know, Governor Walker, you know, telling the same story in the same way in a self-serving yada, yada, yada. And if you're a Republican, you say, isn't that refreshing that you can trust him to say the same thing every time and that he does, you know, he takes, you know, his frugality seriously, whether it's with our money or whether it's with his own. And so, you know, it kind of depends on who you are, I think.
So what kind of effect might shows like Jimmy Fallon's or Saturday Night Live or other entertainment programs have on this 2016 presidential race?
Candidates are using them more and more. Bill Clinton got into a little, you know, mainstream media trouble for appearing on the Arsenio Hall show back in 1992. He wore sunglasses, he played the saxophone, and there were all these very serious stories about whether that was presidential. And now, you know, last night President Obama was on The Daily Show for, you know, which, and it wasn't his first time as president on that show. And so candidates use these shows a lot now. Usually the late night talk shows, your Jimmy Fallon type shows, tend to give pretty soft interviews, tend to make the candidates look good, tend to be very friendly places for them to humanize themselves and also to talk a bit about a policy or two that they care about or some element of their record that they want out there, where they're not going to get a lot of pushback as they might in a interview from a reporter. And so, you know, these things are, you know, meeting new audiences, and they're also doing so in environments that are usually pretty safe and usually pretty likely to kind of, you know, go viral. That'll get a lot more attention because it's more novel for someone running for president to be on one of those shows than, say, Beat the Press.
Well, style stuff, I guess, aside, a lot of people in Wisconsin were wondering how Governor Walker was going to be, you know, treated on the national stage. Just mm-hmm. general thoughts on how the national or even international media is looking at Governor Walker.
I think on balance, the national media's coverage has had a little bit of the jury's still out sort of tone to it. And so the positive things about Governor Walker, they point out, are, you know, winning three elections in a state that's been decidedly blue when it comes to the presidential race over the past several decades. And so there's an electability argument that they often put in their coverage. But a lot of mainstream coverage has also pointed out that his views are, you know, more conservative than some of the other top-tier candidates like Jeb Bush, and there are questions about would that play in a general election? Will that be the kind of thing that would help him win a primary, a national primary, you know, that unfolds over weeks? There's some questions about how Governor Walker will handle the increased scrutiny from the national media. His campaign can quite rightly say, we got a lot of scrutiny during the recall and during Act 10, and we won elections after those. And so there's a little bit of kind of back and forth, I think, there. There are some questions about his foreign policy credentials. His own campaign advisors have been in the paper recently saying that's the thing that they're doing a lot of, if not the most of, in kind of the private, you know, preps and, you know, briefings that he's doing now as a full-time or as a candidate and governor.
Let's we have some callers. Tony in Tomahawk is with us. Hi, Tony.
Hi, good morning. Interesting show. I'm reminded of the book 40-plus years ago, The Selling of the President, about Richard Nixon. And things really haven't gotten better. We're focusing so much on technology and the process, but very little about the content. I'm just wondering, as a journalism professor, is there any hope at all that journalists will begin to say to politicians, you know, when they make a claim, an assertion, is it true and is it accurate? I never hear the most fundamental questions being asked. They just give them their talking points, give them the airtime, talk about their wives or the suit that they're wearing. You know, it's just it's celebrity crap. And I don't read the Huffington Post, don't intend to, but to put all the news about Trump on celebrity pages, I think they could do that with all the candidates for the time being. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, there's a lot of evidence that you know, celebrity politics has grown in fashion in terms of how candidates behave on television, especially. And I think, you know, I think the caller is onto something. When you're watching talk shows on television where candidates are being interviewed, there's very rarely a follow-up question in national interviews, unless the question is, are you running for president? And then they're dogged, you know, to go after that. But usually on a show like Sunday Morning Talk Show, the host is often more concerned with getting to the next graphic to frame their next question than to say, how do you know what you just said is true? Or what is the evidence that shows me what you just said is correct? That kind of stuff doesn't get asked very often, and that's too bad. On the other hand, the rise of fact-checking is one of the big changes in journalism over the last couple of years regarding particular fact-checking websites. So PolitiFact has won a Pulitzer Prize. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel now partners with PolitiFact on their website and give fact checks to candidates on a regular basis. You know, here in Madison, you know, I've seen Jessica Arp on Channel 3 do, you know, fact checks going back and forth between Republican and presidential candidates for local offices. And so these kinds of things are increasingly likely to happen, but they don't happen in a systematic way. And usually in a news story, the reporter will say, well, here's what the candidate said. You know, here's what an opponent of the candidate said. And on occasion, they will adjudicate a factual dispute. But usually, journalists don't do that. Usually, journalists say, our job is to tell you what everyone is saying, and then it's up to you to decide. And, you know, I think that frustrates a lot of news audiences when they say, well, but I don't have the time to learn what is true and what isn't true. And the fact-checking websites that have popped up over the last several years are starting to do more of that. So they'll say, this happened a lot in the last governor's race, for example. So Governor Walker says our state economy is getting better. Mary Burke says it's getting worse. And a fact-checking website will tell you, well, both of those things are true depending upon when you start counting and what it is you're counting. And so there is some of that happening, but it's not probably not as much as it could be to serve news audiences.
Yeah. You know, I've certainly got mixed feelings as somebody in the media, too, who tries to cover these issues. I mean, Governor Walker has been criticized by some for not answering the media's questions
right.
about various issues.
Right.
I mean, a point blank mm-hmm. Question, and he'll sidestep it, or mm-hmm. I'm not going to comment on evolution. That's not my place.
Right.
You know, or I'm a governor. I can't deport immigrants or whatever.
Right. Right.
In fact, let's take a listen to Governor Walker in Iowa over the weekend when he was being asked about whether being gay is a choice.
Do you think that being gay is a choice?
Oh, I mean, I think that's
that's not even an issue for me to be involved in. The bottom line is I'm going to stand up and work hard for every American, regardless of who they are, no matter where they come from, no matter what their background. I'm going to fight for people, and no matter whether they vote for me or not.
To act on behalf of people is to do that properly. You have to understand or at least have an opinion on who they are and where they're coming from.
But again, I think in the end, I don't have an opinion on every single issue out there. I mean, to me, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. So I'm saying that from an opinion standpoint, I don't know what the answer to that is. And again, I'm going to spend my time focused on things that I do know and what I can work on.
So he does not know if being gay is a choice, but she had to go after him a bit to get
right. There was a follow up there, which, you know, I think was commendable on the part of the journalist for asking that.
Yeah. I mean, it talks some about, whether or not, I mean, that's happened quite a bit on the politicians are very careful on what they say.
Oh, sure. Politicians are extremely risk averse. They do not want to stick their necks out if they don't already have a sense of what will happen once they stick their necks out. And a great example of that is Barack Obama running for president in 2008, not for same-sex marriage. And then after he's in office and the polls start to shift and start to favor same-sex marriage, he evolves his position. Lots of liberals think that he was for it all the time and just didn't want to say so. This is what politicians do. They don't want to answer questions that put them in an unfavorable light or that could shift the story to something that they don't want to talk about. The Governor Walker said, yes, I think you're born gay, or no, I think it's a choice. That would have been the story. Instead, he gets to if all he says is, I'm going to fight for people every day, and the journalist wants to use a quote, that's what they have to use. They're stuck. If a disciplined politician won't answer your question, there's not much a journalist can do.
Matt emails, who is going to ask Hillary Clinton the hard questions about who she is? The major media won't report her record as they love her. Your reaction to that?
Well, I think certainly Hillary Clinton has a different opinion about that, who famously does not get along with the news media and thinks that they are, or at least has been reported to think that they're kind of out to get her. We have a pretty good sense of her record. You know, she's been a public figure nationally since 1991 and was a public figure in Arkansas long before that. And so there's not much about her record that we're not aware of. And there's not much that doesn't regularly get covered. And when someone is really well known, people tend to latch on to the things that they know about them and then want to see more of that stuff in news coverage, right? So Governor Walker's opponents, when I see people or I'm at an event talking about news coverage, the people afterwards in Madison will say, why isn't there more national coverage about John Doe? That is just, why aren't they doing that? And part of the answer is, there are lots of things to talk about when someone's running for president, and an investigation that has stopped is usually not going to generate the most attention. And so when people say, well, why don't they talk more about Benghazi for Hillary Clinton or Whitewater for Hillary Clinton, those investigations ran their course. The Republican Congress said that there wasn't anything that Hillary Clinton could have done, in the Benghazi situation, and so when these kinds of things get brought up, it's usually it's kind of illustrative of something that scholars call the hostile media effect, which is the idea that you think news coverage is hostile to your point of view. And it happens to liberals, it happens to conservatives, it happens to them relatively equally. We tend to remember the positive stuff about the other side and the negative stuff about our side when we are consuming news coverage.
Mike Wagner is our guest, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. And we are talking about media and politics. We're talking about the media coverage so far of the presidential race and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Professor Mike Wagner about media coverage of the presidential race and welcoming your assessment, your thoughts and observations. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Yesterday, Ohio Governor John Kasich formally became the 16th Republican candidate to enter the race for the GOP nomination. How does such a big field affect how candidates run their campaigns and garner attention?
That's a great question. There are so many people running. You've got 11, you could you could play football and not everybody would have to play both ways. That's how many people are running for president on the Republican side. And so it's very hard to get attention, especially when you are Governor Perry, Governor Christie, former Governor Huckabee, Senator Rubio, Senator Paul, Governor Walker, Governor Kasich, former Senator Santorum, Governor Jindal. These are all people with relatively similar backgrounds and qualifications. And so how do you decide who to give attention to? So Jeb Bush, you know, has the most money, so there's a news peg to give. Donald Trump is leading the poll, so there's a news peg to give. How do we justify coverage of Rand Paul, who, you know, is garnering 6%? Or how do we justify Chris Christie, who's at 3%? And so that's a hard thing to do for the news media to figure out who to cover and how to do it, other than to say, here's where they were today, here's what they said, here's how much money they're raising, here's what they're trying to do. And candidates have to try to find ways to get noticed. And so that might be how they time their announcement. And so Governor Walker waited a while to do that, and then got quite a bit of attention after the July 4th holiday and people were getting back to their lives. And that was probably a smart time to announce and get a little bit of a splash. So when you announce can be something. The kinds of events you do, when you release your first ad, those are all ways candidates will try to get attention. And then the next way, of course, will be in the debates, the August 6th debate on Fox especially.
Let me take some calls. Doug in Lancaster is with us. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. With regards to coverage, you discussed that there's about 16 candidates on the Republican side, but there's only two on the Democrat, and only one of them seems to be getting a larger amount of coverage. Of course, I'm speaking of Bernie Sanders. I've been noticing a lot that the message from the media is he can't win, he can't win, he can't win. But when you look at the numbers at his rallies versus what's being told to us on the air, it's very disconcerting. The longer people keep getting a message hammered into their head that he can't win, suddenly, you know, people start to believe it. So I'm wondering how the media justifies covering Hillary so much when she doesn't appear to be doing as much versus what Bernie Sanders is doing right now. Thank you.
Mike Wagner?
Well, part of this is also the candidate strategies. It doesn't really serve Hillary Clinton to seek out big rallies right now. What she wants to do is meet voters in Iowa and in New Hampshire and have small events where she meets people, gets to know them, sews up endorsements from key activists, and that's the kind of thing she's doing. And she has kind of the biggest endorsement lead in the modern presidential era right now. And so one reason people are more positive about her chances are just that she's doing the things that people who've won in the past typically do, which is get lots of endorsements. Now, Senator Sanders' strategy has to be, I've got to show that I have a chance, and the way to do that is to have big rallies. And so I will go to places like Madison, Wisconsin, where I'm likely to have a big rally. And when I do that, there'll be great television coverage of cheering throngs of people. There'll be coverage that says this was the largest rally of anybody in the campaign on either side so far. And that'll get a lot of attention. But rallies in a few places are not the same thing as national support in terms of voters, Democratic primary voters across the country, nor is it the same in terms of the resources that they've raised. Now, Sanders is a serious candidate. He's a senator. He's running for president. He's doing all the things you would think a presidential campaign should do. He's a serious candidate, and he has a chance, but not nearly as good of a chance as former Secretary Clinton. And you know, just to point out, there are actually so far at least three on the Democratic side, with Martin O'Malley, the former governor, as well. And also Jim Webb looks like he's running on the Democratic side.
Lincoln Chafee,
former Rhode Island. He was a Republican, then was the most moderate Republican senator before losing, and is now running on the other side.
And I see rumblings that maybe even Vice President Joe Biden might jump in. But
there's still talk that he may get in as well. The endorsement game makes that a harder row to hoe for him, and as a seasoned veteran of presidential campaigns, having run in 88 and having run in 2012, I'm sure he realizes that. But Joe Biden is also the kind of politician who marches to the beat of his own drummer, and if he wants to get in, he certainly will.
Yeah. And you know, on the Democratic side, just this week, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley got into some hot water, and he ended up apologizing for saying all lives matter while discussing police violence against blacks.
Right.
I think Hillary Clinton was criticized for saying essentially the same thing last month because this disregarded the concerns of African Americans in this environment. So how careful do candidates need to be when talking about this on the campaign trail?
They need to be careful, and this is an example of a place in the Democratic Party's coalition that, you know, fracturing is possible, right? So there's been a big conversation nationally about race and policing and race and economic inequality and race and education inequality over the past several months. And the Black Lives Matter movement has been one of the key players in that conversation. And both Senator Sanders and former Governor O'Malley have taken a lot of heat for things that they've said. Hillary Clinton posted on her Facebook page, Black Lives Matter, and had a long post that she signed talking about that in particular, and received kind of positive coverage from left-leaning media saying, out of everyone, she came out of that looking the best, but she also had the most time to do it because she wasn't asked a direct question from a reporter, right? And a couple of callers have pointed out, you know, how candidates are scripted and are avoiding reporters and trying to avoid substantive questions, which is incredibly frustrating as a journalism professor or as a journalist, which I've done. And I imagine the people on the trail would love the chance to get to ask these questions of Secretary Clinton or Governor Walker, but they don't get as many opportunities to meet them as they would like.
Let's take a call from Bob in Bellevue, Iowa. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Joy. Yeah, I think the media will spend the most time with where they think the biggest show is for the benefit of their ratings. And right now, there's a train wreck. It's the wreck of Donald Trump, possibly the wreck of whatever there really is of his fortune, because I know there have been questions as to how much of what he says he has is really just borrowed money anyway, and his lenders may be concerned with it all falling in on him. But that's kind of another matter. Yeah, I think the news media will pay the most attention to the biggest show because that helps their ratings, and therefore their, their money, ultimately money, and...
All right, Bob, thanks. So, yeah, the media is going to cover the candidates making the most outrageous noise and because that helps their ratings, Mike?
Well, Weiner? You know, that sort of stuff is more likely to get the clicks, you know, as they say in the business. You know, a friend of mine at the Washington Post said when we write a story about Governor Walker's issue positions, it gets some traffic from people who care about politics, and when we published a story about him riding his motorcycle, that got way more. You know, and so part of it is, you know, the audience's interest level. And, you know, most people are just not waking up, living and dying with the 2016 Republican and Democratic primaries right now. And so to get attention for candidates, it's very challenging, but also for the news media, who have a responsibility to cover what these people are doing, right? These people want to be president of the United States. There's a big responsibility in covering that. And most Americans are not super interested in that race right now, which makes it harder to sell stories about policy differences between Governor Kasich and Governor Walker and Governor Bush.
So we have just a minute to go. What do you say is the media's most important responsibility when it comes to covering the 2016 presidential race?
I think they need to show us how candidates make decisions, what candidates believe, and what they've done in the past. If they can do those things, then voters, and can do them regularly, voters should have a good, you know, those who want to, should have the opportunity to figure out who it is they would like to be the next
president. Yeah, so do you think they're going to do that?
Well, you know, people understand where candidates stand on positions by the time the November elections come around. But that's a long time, and that also is a problem for candidates who are running now and trying to get attention in the primary and hoping for that chance to tell voters who they are.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mike Wagner, an associate professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication and the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Kayla Blado and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. By the way, coming up tomorrow, between 7 and 8 tomorrow morning, we are going to have U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin with us and, separately, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson to talk about issues in the news. And you can call in your questions for both of them. That's tomorrow between 7 and 8 a.m. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.